From Buck's studio at Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. I'm Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor, here to talk with you about what's new in healthy living, share some down-to-earth advice, and some great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. If you have a question for Zorba, you can call this number now, 1-800-462-7413. Along with your calls, some topics to talk over. Zorba?
Yes, we're going to talk about hookahs or hookahs, depending on when you first heard about them. How bad are they for you, and what do college students think about
them? And if you don't know what he's talking about, stay tuned.
Yeah, exactly.
What else?
Medical students, when they make errors, what goes on? And while we're at it, what about residents and interns, and how does that affect your health if you are in the hospital?
Mm-hmm. And our recipe?
Hobo packets. Now, I love these. When I went camping at something called the Freezeroo with my daughter, I think you'll love it too, even no matter what the weather is.
And I brought my harmonica along to set the mood, so that'll
be
coming
wonderful.
Up.
Tom and the harmonica.
1-800-462-7413, toll free, 1-800-462-7413. To the phones now, Zorba. Our first caller, a listener in Pewaukee, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hello. Yes, my favorite doctor, Dr. Zorba.
Oh, thank you.
And how are you, Tom?
I'm fine. How can we help?
Yes, I have, in a nutshell, subconsciously stopped breathing when I'm doing some things. Just kind of everyday activities, and all of a sudden I'll realize that I was holding my breath. And then I just start breathing normally, and it's so often that I end up having to think about just breathe in and out, just breathe in and out, and not hold my breath. And I don't know if it has anything to do with the fact that I do hum a lot. And I started doing that as I got a little bit older. I'm in my early 60s. I don't know. Do a lot of people do this, or is it kind of strange?
Did you start humming before you started noticing you weren't breathing, or the other way around?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's just kind of come more and more with both as I got a little bit older. And I've just noticed it within the last, maybe a year, maybe not quite that long.
Right. So just a couple of things, because breathing is at a level within our brain that we don't have to think about it. So when we all of a sudden say, I have to take a deep breath, clearly there's something wrong, and the question is what is going on. So just a couple of things. History of asthma at all?
No.
No history of asthma. Allergies? Anything? Allergies of sort? Okay.
No, nothing like that.
Sleep apnea. Sleep apnea is where you actually don't breathe during sleep for periods of time.
I am familiar. My husband actually is just going through that, and we actually brought up that concept because he was just diagnosed with it and has started using a CPAP, which he's having some problems with.
Right. Everyone kind of does with that.
I don't know if it's sympathetic.
Well, I don't know either, but you might have sleep apnea. That's one thing that actually is, can be a symptom of sleep apnea. Mm-hmm. So one thing you want to do is talk to your doc. There's some, there are called two-channel sleep studies without going through the big sleep study that can pretty much rule it out. And it's a contraption that you take at home, because sleep apnea might be the issue. Anxiety, depression, anything along that realm at all?
I have had anxiety, and I do get anxious. Quite frequently.
Yeah, Are you on any medication
usually,
for it?
Yeah, when I'm on the spot, let's say people are coming over pre-party, jitters and things.
Sure. A lot of people get that pre-party. It's interesting to get that, and everyone, of course, I'm sure has a good time when they're at your house, because a party is a party. My daughter Vanessa once said, there's no such thing as a bad picnic.
She said
a bad picnic, and then later on she said there's no such thing as a bad party, and she's right.
Okay.
But anxiety can also be an issue with this. A low-level anxiety can also be an issue, and very low-level antidepressants can make a huge difference, because some people all of a sudden sort of catch their breath and they feel themselves catching their breath, turn out to do very well on a very low dose of an antidepressant such as Prozac. Just 10 milligrams a day can make a big difference. So my recommendation is actually that you should see your doc. You should discuss the possibility of sleep apnea. Think about being screened. And then the possibility that this may be an anxiety-related issue and see whether or not that would make a difference. And those are the things I would do. You breathe without thinking. Everyone does. If you had to think when you have to breathe, you would be dead because you can't do it, you know.
Right. Here, and that is what my GP did tell me, because I did bring it up to her. And she said not to worry about it because your body will breathe when it needs to breathe.
Right.
But my concern was, as with sleep apnea, over a long extended period of time, you can develop problems such as dementia and
other. No. It's and getting back to sleep apnea, you don't get dementia with sleep apnea, but you can get strokes. But during the day, feeling like you have to catch your breath is not the same as sleep apnea. And my recommendation is go back to your GP, look at a low-dose antidepressant, or consider a sleep study. And thank you so much for your call.
Thank you very much for the answers. I appreciate it.
Take care.
Before we get to our next call, you mentioned good, bad parties. No such thing as a bad
party. No such thing as a bad party.
No, I'm not a very social person.
No,
I've gone to a lot of parties that for me were bad parties. And for me, it's a little unusual to be at a party and find it a good party.
A good party. So for you, there is such a thing as a bad party.
Yeah,
but
what
if you're holding a party?
That hasn't happened in quite a while.
Well, that's the difference between my child and you, Tom.
Got it.
My daughter, Vanessa, there's no such thing as a bad party.
800-462-7413, our toll-free number. And Zorba, our next caller is a listener in Lafayette, Indiana. Hi.
Hello.
What's up?
Thank you for answering my call, Dr. Mm-hmm. Pastor. Basically, what it amounts to is that I actually have a question concerning a drug. Are you familiar with colchicine?
Yes. Colchicine is a drug, an ancient drug that then went off patent and went on patent and will be on patent for a while, and it's used for gout.
Yes, and that is pretty much my question.
Mm-hmm.
Is it effectively, it's been around for 3,500 years, and my biggest concern right now is not necessarily that it's going to go away anytime soon. It's more along the lines of, why did it become so hideously expensive?
Right. Well, I'll tell you what the issue was. Mm-hmm. And full disclosure, I was a gout researcher, and I actually did some research where we used colchicine. We didn't research that particular drug. And Takeda is the company that then purchased it. So here's what happened. The FDA said, we have a bunch of old drugs that have been grandfathered in, and we want to get them tested to see if they work. And they got rid of drugs where no one tested them or they didn't work, a drug such as quinine. There was a drug called Quinam used for leg cramps. They couldn't prove that it actually met today's standards, so they got rid of it. And they got rid of a number of old blood pressure pills. And what they did to encourage the testing is they said, we're then going to give you a monopoly on the drug, and we're going to take it off of open, you know, of generic status, where it was a very, very cheap drug.
Yeah, basically we're dealing with a drug that went from 9 cents a pill to $4.82.
It's terrible. And it went into that and said, you're going to get a monopoly if you test it, and then we're going to allow that monopoly to stay for a certain number of years. And I thought it was going to stay.
So like it was a new drug they're treating.
Right.
Yeah.
And they treated, because they wanted to encourage them to test it. Well, it turned out, and I don't know why, but this drug has now been on the market for more than 3 years, and it became a disastrously expensive drug at $4 a pill. And there's basically three drugs we give for a gout flare. We give colchicine, we give anti-inflammatories, or we give steroids. And each one of these drugs have side effects. So steroids can be very good, but if you're diabetic, ruins your blood sugar. Anti-inflammatories, if you've had an ulcer or you have cardiac problems, can be an issue. So colchicine was used and commonly used, and it's become frightfully expensive. And it's an FDA issue because they gave it a monopoly. That's what happened.
Mm.
And we can't do anything.
Words, basically, at the moment, I'm kind of...
You're stuck.
Yes, you are.
Yeah, now.
Yeah.
Now, but let me give you an option. Let me give you an option.
Okay,
you're stuck. Because the FDA gave it a monopoly. I don't know when it goes off label. Takeda bought it from a small pharmaceutical company for, I don't know, a ton of money, so they feel they're going to make money from it. However, have you heard of Canadian pharmacies?
Well, you know, I've been thinking that that might be my next
If it were me and I were paying out of pocket, I would go to a Canadian pharmacy. I can't recommend which one. I think RX Pharmacy World, I think that's the one I've recommended before. It's against the law. You could be prosecuted. You could go to jail for ordering it.
We shouldn't be talking about it.
I am not really caring at this point because, frankly, have you ever suffered from gout?
No. And the reality is many people get them from Canadian and Mexican pharmacies. What they do is they cross the border, get them. There are lots of people in Detroit. They take a bus trip. They go get their drugs in Canada and come back. And people also get it through the mail, even though it's illegal. But I would look, if I were paying $4 for, you know, per pill, I'd look at a Canadian pharmacy because the drug has been around for a long time. You know, the issue of quality control with colchicine is probably minimal. So good luck. And once again, I'm not recommending you break the law. I'm just bringing it up as a matter of fact from an educational point of view. Good luck to you.
Thank you.
Thanks for the call. I think you sort of were recommending, weren't you?
Well, you know what I think is important? People should get the information and they should make decisions. So let me tell you what I do. I have a number of guys who use Viagra, Levitra, and Cialis, which are very, very expensive. They get it from the Canadian pharmacies. Now, where are they manufactured? They're manufactured somewhere else. Do I guarantee the potency or the safety of that drug? No. Do people get drugs from Canadian pharmacies? Yes. Is it my business that they get the drugs? No, it's not my business at all, but I think in America, information is free and available.
1-800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. Well, Zorba, this leads us right into another questionable practice. College students using hookahs.
You know, that'll be the new name of our show. Zorba Pastor on Your Health, questionable practices today.
Yeah.
College students and hookahs. Now, some people pronounce them hookahs. That's probably the way you pronounce them in the teens. Back in the 60s, we pronounced them hookahs. And hookahs were used for only one thing. And do you know what they were used for, Tom?
Yes, I do.
What were they used for, please?
For pot.
They were used for pot.
Yeah.
Now, this was the backyard pot. Full disclosure, I actually smoked and inhaled backyard pot, where you would put a giant cupful of backyard pot in the hookah and sit around and smoke two or three. Now, with today's pot, you would probably die if you actually put it in
because
there.
Because it's a lot stronger than
it used to be. There's no comparison. You look at medical marijuana, I think if you put as much pot in there, it'd probably be a couple hundred dollars based on what they are today. Nonetheless, they're not used for smoking pot anymore like that. They're basically used for smoking tobacco. Tobacco products and often products that are interlaced with tobacco, such as different aromatics and almost an incense. And a lot of college students think they're safe because they go through water. In other words, they go through water, they're cool, they must be safe, it's okay, we'll sit around smoking, and it turns out to be something that is not the case. So here was an article in the Journal of Cancer Epidemiology and Prevention, and they looked at 55 regular hookah smokers, you know, see what they did.
Yeah.
They smoked for a couple weeks, roughly, stopped smoking for a couple weeks, looked at their urine samples of nicotine levels. So we measure nicotine levels in the urine to see if somebody is smoking. We do it for smoking cessation clinics. They do it for research. Mm-hmm. And insurance companies do it when they're actually seeing whether or not they're going to do it. They had 73 times higher nicotine level than people who smoke cigarettes. 73 times.
Holy
Four
God.
Times higher of something called continine. Two times higher for breakdown of a chemical that they actually put in products that are tobacco called NNAL, which basically means that they are at a much greater risk for lung cancer and a whole bunch of other cancers that we know are associated with tobacco.
That doesn't make sense. Why would it be so much more?
Well, because you are cooling the smoke, so you're inhaling deeper and inhaling more smoke.
Oh.
When you smoke a cigarette, you used to smoke cigars. Did you inhale when you smoked cigars?
Oh, no. I smoked a pipe mainly.
Did you inhale when you smoked
no,
a pipe?
No, but, you know, it was hanging around in my mouth. But no, I didn't inhale.
Full disclosure, I smoked cigarettes for 4 years. I was a dumb college student. I thought it was cool. Well, when you smoke cigarettes, you kind of inhale them, but it's burning, so it's hot.
Yeah.
And so here it is. If you cool it, you can breathe deeper, hold it in and get those chemicals in your body. Hookahs are bad.
On the other hand, You can't be a chain hookah smoker.
Yes, that is
carrying
absolutely.
Carrying it around.
That's right. That is true. That is true. You can't be a chain cigarette hookah smoker. You're right. There's always a bright side. We're always looking for the bright side of life.
1-800-462-7413. A Springfield, Missouri caller next, Zorba. Hi.
Hey, how's it going?
Fine. How can we help?
Actually, I have a question about vitamins. I want to know how fast your body eliminates water-soluble vitamins and how long it holds on to fat-soluble vitamins.
Well, first off, water-soluble vitamins generally are thought to last for about a day. That's about what they last within the body. So take vitamin C. Let's say you take a mega dose of C, and we're going to measure it. It's going to be in your body for a day, and you take no C tomorrow, there's going to be a very low C level. Because you get C, obviously, through fruits and vegetables. Fat-soluble vitamins are thought to be stored in fat and last longer. Now, how long that longer is, I don't have the foggiest idea. I don't really know. But one of the reasons that mothers used to give cod liver oil. Did you ever taste cod liver?
Yeah,
I'm looking at Tom, and he's got the smile, thinking back to Mom. What did it taste like, Tom? Please explain the taste.
It just awful is how it tasted.
Awful. Yeah. And when did your mother give you cod liver oil?
I don't even remember. It wasn't that often.
When you were a child, when you were sick.
Yeah, but I don't remember what sickness caused
it. No, it was all sickness. And it was all sickness. He's sick. Basically, I think they gave it to you so you wouldn't complain.
I think you're right.
My mother gave me milk of magnesia when I was sick. Why? I don't know. You know, I was sick. And so I stopped complaining. I think that's really what it was.
You get sick, you're going to get some of that.
Don't complain.
Don't come to me.
Bring
don't
it
tell
on.
Me about it.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. But cod liver oil was given because the liver of cod contained vitamin D, and it was thought to be, an elixir. And it was basically an elixir from vitamin D, and it was started in the time of rickets for children because they found out
kind of
children
because vitamin D did turn out to be pretty.
Right. And children who got cod liver oil had better growth and had better legs, and it turned out that was it. But anyway, so within the cod, the vitamin D lasts for a long time. Within your liver, I don't know, and within your fat, but it lasts longer. That's a long way of answering the question. Does that answer your question? Why did you ask that? What's your reason?
Well, my main reason is I work in a food truck, and I'm sweating a lot all day long.
Yeah.
So I have the concern that maybe I'm losing too many vitamins too fast. And I'm kind of wondering, well, what would make a certain vitamin leave my body quickly and what I can do to hold on to those vitamins
sure,
or
good.
Maybe how much I need to take in.
A very good question. You know, I used to be pro-multivitamin, and then the data came out that showed it wasn't doing very much. However, the data is still in on fruits and vegetables. So if you sweat a lot, I would recommend a little fruit juice during the day. That's what I'd recommend. Mm-hmm. Probably a citrus juice, such as orange juice or something of that nature. Or I would recommend fresh fruit that's even better. You don't want to drink a lot of fruit juice. You know, a typical serving is a 6-ounce glass because it's 100 calories per ounce. You have to be careful. But I would recommend some real honest-to-goodness fruit juice so you're getting some vitamins. And then I would take an apple during the day, something like that. That'll replenish your vitamins. Carrots, apples, fruits and vegetables. Mother Nature is better than industrialized products.
Should I try and get every single water-soluble vitamin every day?
No, because if you eat well, you're not going to get that. And there's no shortcut to eating well. So you want to get three to four servings of fruits and veggies, or rather 5 servings of fruits and veggies a day. Now, a serving is a handful of lettuce. A serving is half as a piece of fruit. A serving is a small banana, so if you have a large banana. That's the best way to replenish your vitamins. Pills don't work, even though they sell. It's a $10 billion a year industry. So I'm pushing against not only, Mother Nature's on my side, but a lot of people at GNC are not.
Thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome. Good luck and stay hydrated.
Thanks so much for the call. Before we take a quick break, Zorba, time once again for your favorite do-gooders, the Grammar Police.
Oh, I love them.
This week's correction comes to us from Scott in Norman, Oklahoma. He writes, "Good day, Zorba. I love your show. On the topic of grammar, you recently said you'd think English were my second language. Then you corrected it to English was my second language. You were right the first time, Zorba. The sentence was in the subjunctive mood and so would use the word were Don't let the grammar police get you down.
So I was right.
Yeah.
And when I corrected myself, I was wrong.
Yeah.
You know,
I would have made that same mistake. I mean, not to.
You mean if you were.
I would think English was my second language. Yes, that's what I would
but
think.
But maybe that's because you weren't thinking the right way versus wasn't thinking the right way. See? Okay. Sometimes it makes sense.
I like it. If you'd like to join the ever-growing grammar police force, send your grievances along in an email to
Zorba at WPR.org, and don't forget, we ain't kidding.
Okay. Our recipe is coming up next. It's a round the campfire recipe. You'll enjoy it. Lots more of your calls, some more emails to talk about, our medical myth buster too, right here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Our toll-free number again, 1-800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413.
And you know, it's amazing, Tom. I do not remember when we've ever had a musical introduction to the recipe of hobo packets. It's awesome.
Shucks. Let's do the recipe.
Aw, shucks. Gee whiz, Tom. That's exactly. Well, first of all, hobo packets are wonderful. So my daughter Vanessa and I, along with my really good friend Dan Barry, would do the freezeroo. And we did this for, I don't know, half a dozen years, where you would pick the coldest winter, the coldest weekend in the winter in Wisconsin. Now, you know Wisconsin is cold.
Oh, yeah.
But the third week in January, Wisconsin can be really cold. And one of the times we did it, it was 20 degrees below zero, and we camped outside. Mm-hmm. But part of what we did was we had hobo packets. And let me tell you, when you're camping outside in the cold weather and you've just chopped wood for your fire, these hobo packets taste better than anything I've ever had at the Four Seasons or a Michelin two-star restaurant.
Okay, let's do it.
And they are yummy. Okay, hobo packets. Start out with a tablespoonful of extra virgin olive oil.
One big tea, extra virgin olive oil.
And we know that every hobo who ran the rails in the 20s and 30s always had a packet of extra virgin olive oil in their back pocket. You know?
Absolutely.
Absolutely. You know, some people think they ate lard, but let me tell you, they ate really.
Okay.
Yeah, right. Yeah, the modern version. A small onion diced.
Small onion diced.
Two large potatoes cubed. If you want to use a bunch of red potatoes, but two Idaho potatoes, I would choose Yukon Gold. It's my favorite Idaho potato.
Two large potatoes cubed.
Two large carrots peeled and sliced.
Two large carrots peeled and sliced.
8 ounces of mushrooms.
8 ounces of mushrooms.
A large red pepper sliced into strips.
A large red bell pepper sliced into strips.
4 cloves of garlic minced.
4 cloves of garlic minced.
2 tablespoonfuls of butter.
2 big tea butter.
Salt and pepper.
S&P.
Okay, so here's what you want to tear off 4 large squares of aluminum foil. And when you do this, I would recommend the heavy-duty aluminum foil. But for this recipe, it's really much better.
Mm-hmm.
Drizzle all 4 aluminum square pieces with the olive oil. You could use olive oil spray if you want to. Put a half tablespoonful of butter on each foil. Okay, you got the half tablespoonful of butter on each foil. Okay, place the potatoes, carrots, mushrooms, and red peppers on top of the butter in each aluminum square. Evenly drizzle the minced garlic and diced onion over the 4 servings. Then sprinkle with the kosher salt and pepper and drizzle with a little more olive oil and then fold up the sides. Now, I want to go a little bit about this recipe.
Mm-hmm.
This is a recipe that you often do with children.
Sure.
You know, because it's a fun thing to do.
Oh, yeah, right, right.
I mean, so it's kind of like, what do we do with children or grandchildren? It's a fun thing. So you fold the squares, making a nice little bed for the ingredients so none of the butter and oil can escape while cooking, because otherwise you'll get a flare. And this is how you make it. You could grill the packets for 30 to 45 minutes over, in your grill.
Mm-hmm.
You could grill them if you do so over medium heat. You can bake them in the oven at 350 degrees if you want to. Or if you really want to be authentic, heat them over the campfire with friends.
Absolutely.
And don't forget the harmonica. So, Tom. I love it.
How can we get this recipe?
I love it. This land is made for you and me. I love it. Okay. You can go to WPR.org. You can get this recipe, find a lot of other recipes, see photos of Tom and I. I might even be able to get him to do a photo with the harmonica in place, which I think you will absolutely love. And don't forget, we are all over Facebook.
1-800-462-7413 is our toll-free number, 800-462-7413. Now back to the phones, Zorba. A listener with us in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Hi.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure. How can we help?
Well, I hope I don't stump you. I hope you can help me out.
Mm-hmm.
About 5 years ago, I had a horrible cough. Couldn't get rid of it. I went to the doctor. They had no idea what was wrong with me. I had the cough for about 2 years, and I had a pacemaker after that. When I went into the hospital for my pacemaker, they put me on oxygen right away, and the cough stopped. After I had the pacemaker for about 6 months, I didn't have the cough, and then the cough returned. I've had the cough now for 2.5 years, and I've been to doctor after doctor, specialist after specialist, every test I think known to man for the cough, and they can't figure out why I'm still coughing.
Uh-huh.
I don't know what to do, where to go, what to turn to exactly.
Sure.
And I'm stumping everybody here in Oklahoma City.
Sure, you're stumping. And there's really good health care in Oklahoma City. And I spoke at the medical school there. You have great, great docs. Couple things. First of all, you got a pacemaker? How old were you when you got your pacemaker?
I was 46.
46. What did they say it was from? Did you have a cardiomyopathy, which is an enlarged heart often? Was there something that went on?
No. They said it was idiopathic bradycardia, which is no known reason, but my heart rate dropped into the 20s.
Okay.
I had some other issues going on. I had Crohn's disease diagnosed at the same time that I had my pacemaker.
Okay.
So a few other things going on, but no structural damage to my heart,
excellent.
No enlarged heart,
excellent.
Anything like that.
Excellent. Okay. So you had a slow heart. Luckily, you didn't die. You have a pacemaker and you're alive. And your cough went away for a period of time. And we don't really know why it went away, came back. You've checked the medicines that you're on to make sure they don't cause a cough. Is that correct?
That's correct.
You're not on a blood pressure pill at all?
I'm not. No.
Okay. So you're not on – you're on a bunch of meds for your Crohn's disease?
Well, I'm on Humira injections right now.
Okay.
And that's the only thing.
Okay.
I went on Humira and Lialda, but now I'm just on the
and
Humira.
And I don't think Humira causes a cough, but I'd have to look it up. But I don't think so. Okay. They've looked at GERD, a possibility of reflux is causing the cough.
They've ruled that out.
Mm-hmm. Were you on a medication for that?
I was not. They did a pH probe, and then they did a trial of medicine for it, and it did not help.
Uh-huh. How long were you on the medicine?
Oh, goodness, I believe about 3 or 4 months.
Uh-huh. Three or four months. So you were on something to reduce the acid in your body. Because one common cause of a cough is GERD. So even though you were on the medicine, I'm going to give you a recommendation that I want you to try. What I would try is over-the-counter Prilosec, omeprazole. I would take 40 milligrams. I would take 20 milligrams, or rather 40 milligrams twice a day. Okay, morning and evening. The first one I would take on an empty stomach 1/2 hour before I was eating.
I don't mean to interrupt you, but I'm on that right now.
Oh, you're on that right. And that has not made a difference. Did you mix that with Zantac?
No.
Okay, I would add Zantac 300 milligrams at bedtime. That's what I would do. Do you drink any caffeinated products?
I don't anymore. No, I haven't for a couple of years now.
Okay, so you've stopped caffeinated products.
Yes.
Are you an anxious person?
I only want
a yes or a no. That's all I want. Would you call yourself an anxious person?
Well, anxious, no. Stressed out, absolutely. Absolutely.
Have you tried a low-dose antidepressant?
I'm on one.
What are you on?
Cymbalta.
Cymbalta, 60 milligrams a day?
Yes.
Okay. Has that helped your anxiety?
I don't believe so.
Okay. So you may want to add an anxiety pill to it, such as a low dose of risperidone. Now, risperidone in a high dose, we actually give for people who are psychotic. But in a very, very low dose, a little risperidone, like 0.5 milligrams, half a milligram twice a day, or 1 milligram twice a day, can reduce anxiety. And it may be, if you've ruled out everything physiological, it may be that the cough is partially an anxious issue that's going on. And when you have the pacemaker, your mind was elsewhere. You know, you have the pacemaker, you're worried about your heart, you're not thinking about your cough, and you stop coughing. And you may want to consider that, because anxiety can do that. The other thing that you may think about with your doctor is a low-dose beta blocker. Beta blockers are wonderful drugs that we give for high blood pressure, thyroid disease, and other things, but they also help with stage fright, and they reduce the adrenal response that happens with flight or fright. So 10 milligrams of propranolol, that's Inderol, once or twice a day, or 25 milligrams of Atenolol may reduce the fright response, and that may work for your cough. Those would be my two suggestions. You stump me, but I'm thinking outside the box.
I kind of like that. I think that might be working. Like I said, I wouldn't say anxious, but stress definitely, and that all makes sense, quite frankly.
You let us know what happens. I am very, very interested, and so is Tom. Good luck.
Well, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Yeah, appreciate the call. Thank you. 800-462-7413. And Zorba, our next caller is a listener in Jacksonville, Florida. Hi.
Hello. Love your show. I've been listening to it for years, so glad to be on it.
How can we help?
Well, I'm 68, and I just had my physical for the year, and went to my doctor with a diagnostics report, you know, the one with the blood tests. And I had a question about testosterone. I have a bunch of friends that are associates that are using either the gel or shots. And I talked to my doctor about it because the range on this particular report says that for my age, it's 46 to 224. And I had a 62, which he said was a little low, but it's okay. So I asked her about prescribing the supplements, and she said she would not do that. She said that there's some kind of a problem that has been noted with prostate cancer and the supplements. And she says, I'll prescribe anything for you, like, you know, Lipitor or Atenolol or anything like that that's a life-saving or extending thing. But she says, on something like this, I won't do it. If you want it, you have to go to a urologist and have him look at it before I prescribe it for you. So I was just going to, I got, you know, three or four good friends on this kind of stuff. And it's basically they've gotten a lot of energy. They're younger than I am.
I can chime in on this. Well, first of all, they're younger. How much younger are they, by the way?
Late 50s, mm-hmm. early 60s.
Uh-huh. 10 years
later. They're younger than I am, let's put it that way.
Often, people who are younger have more energy. I know that's shocking, but that tends to be it. Okay, the testosterone gels are a $2 billion a year industry. And basically, the use of testosterone has increased dramatically with the fact that we don't have to give injections. And you can give it as a gel, and it can be absorbed through the skin. And all of a sudden, we're given all this testosterone. And what does that mean? And what is it actually good for? Then you had a study that was redacted or retracted from the New England Journal of Medicine years ago that supposedly showed it was an increase in muscle mass. And the study was retracted. Very unusual for the New England Journal of Medicine to do it. Then you have a bunch of clinics that are opening up. Urologists are saying, feel stronger fast, which was the old Geritol recommendation for an iron supplement back in the 50s. Take testosterone and you'll become 10 years younger. And the reality is, it doesn't work. Now, there's a placebo effect. You put the gel under there, you feel good. Sort of like I had a trainer who was a hockey player. I know I'm going off on a metaphor. Yeah. Hockey player. And I said, why do you dress up before hockey games? And he said, look good, feel good, play good. Mm-hmm. That's what he said. Look good, feel good, play good. So here it is. You look in the mirror, you put on the testosterone, you feel better, and you say you have more energy. It's bogus. There is no evidence that you get more energy if your testosterone is within the normal range.
And
it has side effects.
And I was going to say, dangerous to this?
Prostate cancer can activate it. You know, who wants prostate cancer? Raise your hand.
Yeah.
Nobody wants prostate cancer. How about heart disease? We have testosterone, which is an androgenic steroid. It is regulated by the FDA. Why? Because it has side effects. You can have something called roid rage. It can change your personality so that you all of a sudden become angry and depressed. There may even be an increased rate of suicide. Nobody has ever tested that. All for something that is bogus and that is advertised on TV. Now, let's assume your testosterone level was out of range, okay? You're not out of range. You're normal. You don't need it. It's not going to give you more energy. It's going to give you a placebo effect. But let's assume it's below range. There still is a question among physicians, good physicians who are researchers, whether or not you should give testosterone. And I'm going to go to one more thing from this. We used to give all women estrogen. We said it was the secret of the good life. Mm-hmm. Then we found out we were causing cancer, heart attacks, and strokes. And so we stopped giving estrogen. Mother Nature is the best way to do things. Exercise, diet, and tell your friends, take your testosterone. I called up Zorba, and he said it's a waste of money and not good for you.
Very good. Well, I appreciate it.
I didn't mean to do a rant on it, but
no, it's great. No, that's perfect.
Yeah,
I love my doctor. She's great. She always recommends the right things, and when she says she's against something, I just felt I needed to just check with you.
Excellent. You've got a good doc. Congratulations.
Thank you very much for your time. Appreciate it.
Yeah, we appreciate the call too. Thank you. And before we take a quick break, Zorba, we often have a segment called "Disagreeing with the Doc," but every once in a while, someone actually agrees with you.
Shock, Tom.
Here's an email.
Floored.
Email from a listener, Clint, in Wichita, Kansas. He writes, "Dear Dr. Pastor, I want to compliment you for specifically mentioning occupational therapists on the air. So often in the media, physical therapy is used as a blanket term to cover the work of both occupational and physical therapists. I often see a snippet, a video, or a photo in which an occupational therapist is assisting a child with handwriting problems or helping a veteran learn to use a prosthetic arm, and the caption will read something like, 'Physical therapy is crucial to the rehabilitation process.' I think America is ready to know the truth that in many rehabilitation and public school settings, occupational therapists and their assistants work as part of a team that includes speech, language, pathologists, and physical therapists, and that one term is insufficient to adequately describe all three. Thanks. I enjoy your show. And remind Tom that broccoli is not a four-letter word, but yeah. I'm adding tofu is.
That's very good, tofu is. Well, that's a great letter, and they're right. You know, often people say PT, and it's a team approach, and yep. The OT people do a lot. Clearly, the PT people got a better advertising agency when they first started doing things, and maybe it's because PT is more common than OT, because yep. We send a lot of people post-injury. But good point, because PTs do not do what OTs do, and OTs can do fantastic things for people.
Okay. If you agree with something Zorba said, just send your warm fuzzies in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org or do it through Facebook.
We have some medical research to talk about. That's coming up next. More of your calls, of course, our Medical Mythbuster 2, right here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Our toll-free number again is 800-462-7413. But before our next call, Zorba, some research on medical students and errors.
Right, medical students and errors, and also we can look at residents and interns and errors. So what is the most dangerous time of the year to be hospitalized?
Dangerous time of the mm-hmm. year?
Yeah, there's certain times that are
more
dangerous.
I think I know, but I'm going to let you say it.
It's generally around July. July is the most dangerous time. And the reason is you have medical students, interns, residents leaving the system.
Yeah.
You have new medical students, interns, residents going into the system. You have people who don't know as much coming in and people who knew more leaving. And it turns out to be a difficult time. And the Institute of Medicine estimated back in 1999, there were roughly 100,000 deaths from medical errors within the country, not just due to residents and medical students,
yeah,
but these are errors that actually occur. And this is something I think we have to talk about as a society.
But aren't there checks and balances involved here?
There are. There are checks and balances. There are. The electronic medical record, for instance, does as taking care of a lot of checks and balances because there are warning flags. But I'll give you a perfect example. When there are warning flags that came up, so there's a drug called Tramadol, which is used for pain, and then it acts a little bit like Prozac. So if you're on Prozac and Tramadol, there'll be a warning slide that comes up when you're ordering it. But it turns out you can mix them both together for the most part. And so if you have too many warnings, people don't notice it. And yet a significant warning can be worse.
Yeah, but if I'm new to the profession, just graduated, somebody certainly is looking over
my
shoulder.
And this was an article that showed that medical students often make errors. And they don't really have any training and instructions on how to actually disclose their errors. So in the hospital, they may write an order to do this. And then that order has to be signed at some point by their acting intern or their acting resident who actually is the one who's, quote, monitoring the order. But often the order has gone in and they may not sign it for 3 hours or 4 hours later, and the order may be a mistake. And many mistakes are minor, but some mistakes are serious.
Well, they should tighten that system up, shouldn't they?
Well, they tighten it up. You try to tighten it up. You try to decrease the error rate. But the fact is, part of the issue is the disclosure of errors. In other words, within training, medical students, interns, and residents don't have a formal way of saying, look, I have an error. I made a mistake. This is what we should do. So sometimes errors aren't brought up to be looked at, and that can be the problem,
too. In the meantime, I stay out of the hospital in July.
In the meantime, well, I think it's very important during that season of the year to simply, as a patient, realize you've got to take some extra thing and say, is this the correct way? And just sort of try to lead the students, especially if you're in a university hospital. But on the whole, the system is getting better and will be throughout the years.
1-800-462-7413, our toll-free number. And back to the phones now, Zorba, a listener with us in Knoxville, Tennessee. Hi.
Hi there.
How can we help?
I just love Dr. Zorba. I just enjoy both of you guys so much. I always listen to the show. I've got an easy question. It involves curcumin. It's the spice from turmeric, and it's widely used in Indian food. You're probably familiar with
it.
They actually use it in India, not just for food, but medicinal purposes. The bottom line being that it helps inflammation. I have been, in 07, I was diagnosed with sarcoidosis, which is something that you never hear on a radio station as this.
That's right.
So I'm happy to be able to at least give it a little recognition. As far as I can see, there's no clinical trials on curcumin and sarcoidosis, more towards Alzheimer's and ulcerative colitis, things like that. So if you could tell me anything, I'd be thrilled.
Oh, sure. So sarcoidosis, by the way, is you have a chest x-ray and it looks like you have tuberculosis and you don't. In other words, it's not TB. We don't know what causes it. We've got some ideas. It may be caused by an infection of some sort. It can be a chronic disease. Quite often people are put on steroids or they're put on a drug called methotrexate. They can be put on that basically for inflammation. And it's kind of an inflammatory disease of the lung. And when I say kind of, it's because it's really in a class of its own. In other words, sarcoidosis is a disease not talked about very often at all and treated. And anti-inflammatories such as steroids are used during many an acute phase. There are no studies on turmeric and its use. It's an Ayurvedic medicine. It's an ancient Indian medicine that was used. There are, like you said, some studies going on. I don't think there's any side effect from it. I don't look at a downside because it's been used for 3,500 years. But whenever I look at a supplement such as turmeric, my recommendation is is you only buy the brands that have been tested so you know what you're getting. So uh-huh. I always recommend people go to consumerlabs.org. I like the guy's site. He does a great job. Everything is tested. It costs a certain amount to go into the site because there's no advertising at all. Consumer Reports also does things. Some libraries actually subscribe to Consumer Reports, but Consumer Labs is my go-to site. I think it's great. We'll put a link on our website to Consumer Labs. Our website is zorbapastor.org. Mm-hmm. We'll put a link to there. I would go into there, pay the money, and get the turmeric they recommend in the dosage that they recommend. And also, they do a great job of telling you what the effects and what the side effects are. And so this is information, unlike public radio. Well, you kind of have to pay. You should pay for public radio information, right? You don't have to, but you should. But this is like giving money to your public radio station, which we know is very important to keep that information up. Mm-hmm. You're giving money to a private company that is testing it. That's the only turmeric I would use. Otherwise, you don't know what you're getting. The FDA mm-hmm. regulates these things with a very soft hand.
Well, I really appreciate that. I've never done that. ConsumerLabs.com. I will do that.
Yeah,
thank
ConsumerLabs.com.
You.
Good luck, and let us know what happens. Thank you.
Thank you. Bless you so much.
Oh, thank you very much. We appreciate the call. 800-462-7413. And now, Zorba, it's myth-busting time again. This one comes to us from a loyal listener named Mary. Answer carefully now, because this question has been hotly debated for years at taverns and supper clubs across the country, sometimes spurring irreparable rancor, often dividing families for decades. Are you ready, Zerba?
I am ready.
Is a perch fish fry dinner with fries healthier than a lean cheeseburger with fries?
Oh, gosh, you know, this is like comparing the fat to the fat. You know, which is better, you know, a deep-fried Twinkie or a deep-fried Hostess cream-filled cupcake?
Okay.
You want me to answer this?
I do.
I've got an answer that will blow you away.
Okay.
It depends on the size of the perch and the size of the burger.
Okay, wait a minute.
Yeah.
They're both the same size.
Oh, no. Oh, no. Oh, you're putting me. How about the fries? Are they the same size?
Yes.
Okay. Okay. So we're trying to compare the cheeseburger to the perch.
Yes.
Well, the perch would
fried
be.
Perch.
The perch. Well, the what are you talking about?
Fat
the breading.
Fried perch.
That's right.
Breaded.
The breaded fried perch. So it depends on the thickness of the breading versus the cheese.
I promise you, Zorba will not dodge your myth if you'd like to submit one to us like he just dodged this one. How can anybody get in touch, Zorba?
They can go to ZorbaPastor.org, or they can post it on Facebook and do it today.
You're really saying they're both about the same.
Yes.
800-462-7413, our toll-free number. Now, Zorba, let's welcome a listener in Griffin, Georgia. Hi.
First of all, thank you for taking my call. My question is, getting on up in years, I eat my – it's about preparation for steak. Now, I prefer my Pittsburgh medium, and that is, it's burnt both sides, medium in the middle, Pittsburgh mm-hmm. medium. My wife eats them Pittsburgh rare. Mm-hmm. My question is, it's being said it's charred on the outside, mm-hmm. could that be bad for me? And I'm just curious as to whether that was possibly bad for me. Everyone I've ever introduced to the steak to have it prepared this way has changed over to it.
When you char meat on the outside, you're getting rid of any E. coli that can be on meat. Let's look at E. coli as a poisoning, because it is. It's a, you know, and you can be not poisoned, but you can get sick from E. coli. But when you look at a steak, for instance, the only E. coli that can be on a steak is on the outside of the steak. It's not in the steak. And so when we look at E. coli food poisoning, it comes generally from hamburgers because it's mixed in with a bunch of other burgers and it's within the whole product. So when we look at burgers, they always say, well, heat burgers so there's no red on the inside. Why you want to kill the E. coli? Mm-hmm. So from a steak point of view, when you're charring it, there are no E. coli on the outside. The chances that you're going to have E. coli are about as close to zero as you can have. That's number one. Now let's look at the nitrosamines that are caused by charring. There is a theoretical tiny risk that nitrosamines might cause cancer. When I say theoretical and tiny, in other words, infinitesimally small. And so every time around June, July, and August during barbecue season, people bring up the fact that nitrosamines are bad for you, often ignoring other things that might be bad for you, like driving your car when it's raining outside and it's dusk.
Yeah.
That happens to be bad for you. Good chance of death in a car. Better chance of death in a car driving it when it's raining in the dusk or when the temperature is 32 degrees and you're driving it and it might be ice slick. So you got to look at other risks. Mm-hmm. Your risk of getting cancer for that is incredibly small. So let me ask you some other things. Do you smoke cigarettes? Well, come on. Give me a break. You're worried about the risk of death from a charred steak and you're smoking cigarettes. It's the tobacco, baby. It's not the charred steak. So let's go back to the steak. Don't worry about the steak. And when you're cooking it on the – if you're cooking on the grill or you're in the restaurant, just make sure you don't smoke a cigarette before the restaurant and after the restaurant. And that will keep you healthy.
All right.
Take care now.
1-800-462-7413, our toll-free number. 800-462-7413. And before we head out, Zorba, we recently received this email from a listener named Teresa, and we just couldn't resist reading it on air. On a recent show, we were talking about pedometers, and, well, I'll just read the email. Teresa writes, "Funny story about pedometers. My sister-in-law was trying to give away pedometers at a Hispanic health event, but wasn't having much success. Her dad came over and picked one up and asked her what it was. When she said a pedometer, he gave her a very strange look and asked why she'd give those away. In wondering why he didn't know what it was, she learned that in Puerto Rico, pedo means fart. So he couldn't understand why someone would want to count their farts."
That is really funny. That is very funny.
If you have a story to share, post it to our Facebook page or send it along in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org. And don't forget, you'll see this on Saturday Night Live.
See you next week, Zorba.
Stay well, Tom.
If you missed anything during the show or just want to download our show podcast, visit us on the web
at ZorbaPastor.org or find us on Facebook.
And don't forget, you can call us anytime at 800-462-7413. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's not intended as a medical diagnosis, so please do check with your doc. Our executive producer is Carl Christensen, and our technical director is Brad Kohlberg. Our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidran. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Tom Clark, hoping you'll join us for the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
Copies of today's show are available through the radio store at 800-747-7444. Ask for program number 0607Z. More information on Zorba, his clinic, and healthy living, including heart-healthy recipes, podcasts, and show archives, is available online at ZorbaPastor.org.
PRI, Public Radio International.